It's time for the Haddit.com radio show. Haddit.com radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Haddit.com radio show. I'm Jay Basher. I'm pinch hitting for Gerald Cook today for the next couple of shows. Gerald is kind of busy. He's got some things going on. They're turning him into the Bionic Man there, and once they get him done and rebuilt, then he'll be back with us. And we got a new person on the broadcast team. He's been around the last several weeks, but I want to send Mr. Alex Graham, or as we passionately know him and had it, his name is Asnod. We want to welcome him aboard as one of the staffs. Alex, welcome aboard, and how you doing today?
Well, you know, I'm one of those members of the paddle club, you know, one where they put them things on your chest and they go, clear, before they pull the trigger on it. Makes you jump a little bit. You know what I'm talking about, John?
How many joules you pulling?
I don't know how many volts or how many amperes it took them to get me going again. Mm-hmm. The VA did that to me, but anytime that happens to you, you got to wake up every morning as early as possible, listen to the birds chirp and the crickets, and watch that sunrise come up and get the robin get his worm. Because, buddy, you're living on borrowed time, that's for sure. If those paddles didn't exist, you wouldn't exist. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. How about you?
Hey, I'm just making it day to day. You know, we live and one day to the next, and whatever comes around, you know, whatever gets in our way, we tackle it as we go, you know. We're like the coach on the sideline. The wrong player gets the ball, we run and tackle them if the team can't, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. To me, it's like now that I have this new lease on life, now that I've killed this hepatitis thing, it's the you know, you got to put the coffin away. You got to look forward to a regular life that actually – will end in old age or senility or whatever, Alzheimer's or something for you, because now I'm going to live. It's pretty exciting to me, honestly, to know that I don't have that 2018 death sentence. I saw that, what was that gal's name, Farrah Fawcett Majors? Remember, she went down the tubes with that liver cancer and just ate her alive and decimated her. And I wasn't looking forward to that.
Yeah, she was. She died in 2012. When was it? 12? When she passed away? Because just passed away, and I think Michael Jackson died too, right at the same time. And I think mm-hmm. her death kind of overshadowed, and then that's when Michael Clark Duncan also. They all went about the same time. Well, Michael had his heart attack about the same time, so they all, you know, they all. No, Michael Jackson was a different year. I'm sorry, but they kind of had the same overshadowed each other. Less thinking.
Just, you know, it's sad, but I, as far as Michael Jackson goes, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about that. That sounds to me more like that was more drug-induced. Hers is a genuine disease of 20, 30 years. It just gradually ended in stage 4 and death.
I think what'd she have? Was it a cancer, breast cancer?
I think she had liver cancer and pancreatic cancer, pancreas, whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a double whammy, but she was going to go down the tubes on either one of them singularly, regardless of whether it was two of them involved. Once that cancer gets to ripping and snorting, it's too late to pull the plug on it. I'm just glad I'm not going down that road. I got my fingers crossed that I'm not going to get liver cancer, but I'm a positive mental attitude guy, too, you know. The sun will always shine. I don't know if it's going to shine today, but it will shine again, and I'll be there to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a positive mental attitude. Have a better attitude about life, especially when you realize that you've looked at death and contemplated it, had your will written for it, had everything all donated, divvied up for the kids, and now you tear it up and say, hell, I'm going to spend it now.
Well, listen, don't get too reckless now. You all still got to take care of yourself.
Well, no, I'm not talking about burning the candle at both ends or anything. I'm talking about my whole new life coming up as a VA agent.
That's right.
Be nasty to the VA. And I have a license.
Give them that don't give a chance to bump you off either.
They had their chance. I gave them a whole year trying to kill me, and they blew it. They even brought me back.
They love using that system. They like getting you into the VA, into the VBA system, getting your claim going, getting in the VA healthcare system, and they just love rolling you over into the VA cemetery system. They're a full service agency, ask not.
Cradle to grave agents.
They're a full service agency.
What I look at here, what I, because when you called and said you want to punch a show, I said, good God, yeah. I've been watching a bunch of older vets. There is as you know as well as I do, a bunch of younger vets generally had it all the way from recent Iraqistan vets from Iraq and Afghanistan, but also a lot of that 1990s, the original Desert Storm group. But what I've noticed is that, and Buck and the Gaston and a bunch of these other guys, I don't know whether they're pulling them in or where they're coming from, but you're starting to see a bunch more Vietnam vets coming out of the woodwork and finally deciding that they're going to do something, because now they're getting into retirement mode. I think if the youngest you could be right now and still have served in Vietnam would be,
about
60 years old. You're not seeing, there ain't any spring chickens left over from that war.
Well, the Vietnam was over in 75, right? So
yeah, that'd be the last guy.
The last guy out of 75. If he was 19 or 18 and 75 and got out of Vietnam in 75, so 85, 95, 2005, that's 40 years ago. So he would be 60 years old, buddy. That's
I'm
pretty
saying.
Young.
The woodwork, all of a sudden, they're all starting to realize all them aches and pains and the diabetes, and all of a sudden somebody says to them, well, gee, Bob, you're a veteran, for crying out loud. Diabetes, Agent Orange, hello. And they get on the internet because they don't know any better, and they type in veterans benefits, and poof, up comes Had It and Ask Not and Yuku and a few other different things. And Had It by far is getting a lot of the traffic on it, but they're starting to realize that there is a whole new world out there that they could take advantage of. And that's what my wife is running into with real estate agents that are her age. They're saying, wasn't that your husband, the one that helped Bob, the guy that got the medals and everything? God, he got him 100%. What's his telephone number? Can I talk to him? My husband's in a mess. Believe it or not, tomorrow morning, the postmistress who runs my local post office down here, she tackled me when I was in there last week, and she says, man, you're always in here mailing stuff off to the Veterans Administration. What in the hell's that all about? So I started telling her, and she says, oh, my God, my husband's a Vietnam vet, and he's got all these problems. And is there any chance he could talk to you? I'm meeting him tomorrow for coffee at 10 a.m. I mean, it's a bow wave. Allison Hickey complained about this back in 2012 after the 2010 thing where they let in hairy cell leukemia and ischemic disease and those other diseases for
ischemic heart disease and B cell leukemias.
They all complained about there was this huge bow wave of new vets that crashed into the system. They're leftovers from Vietnam. And 34% of the victims were 34 were just hepatitis, Agent Orange related claims alone. Then about 36, Iraq and Afghanistan, and then the rest of them are, you know, flag requests and that kind of stuff.
The main player on that on those regs, when they come in with the new ratings for the Agent Orange, was just the fact that it was the new presumptives. It was the fact that the guys that had the claims got head-of-the-line privileges. They went straight to the top.
It was like cream right to the top of the milk.
Do not pass go. They went straight. They, you know, they got head of them. They bypassed everybody.
Well, and that's because they're sick. They're ill and they're sick and they need to get rated ahead of time so they get advanced on the docket. Yeah, that's a medical hardship. I got that for the hepatitis. knocking on stage four when I went in there to file, and they put me right to the front of the line before I died. I was impressed. In fact, every time I go to the BVA, they always give me that advancement on the docket now, and I'm not 75 years old yet.
Tell you the truth, 75 is not. You know what the actual age is?
Students for getting an advancement under Rule 900. That's a.
You know what the actual age is?
Five, or you have a medical or financial exigency.
They change that. It's 90. They changed to 90 years old now. Yeah.
Just give it to me last April. Because I've been fighting VA for 22 years, and he was disgusted. So he advanced me on the docket right there at the hearing, right in front of Bob Walsh and God and Country in the microphone. He says, I'm advancing this on the docket. This is stupid.
Well, should have.
You know, what's even funnier is the folks back in Washington, D.C. at the VR&E, probably listening to our show, too. Jack Kammerer, the head of VR&E, they're all sitting there. They're having a, what do they call that, a conclusion. They're passing this document around about my greenhouse for all this money. They're passing it around in a circle. It's a concurrence thing. Each person has to sign off on it. They just discovered that a ILP program runs for 3 years, and the Veterans Law Judge said it had to be a heated greenhouse. So that means they got to buy my propane for 3 years. And it's causing a lot of problems down there.
It's called their sphincter. Their sphincter is too tight to get out of the money now.
The reason they're having such a problem with my claim is nobody's ever won one before. They always denied them until this judge came along and gave this to me. So they're in uncharted territory. It's a pretty scary place to be. It's like boldly going somewhere.
You've broken the ice now. Hopefully more will follow.
You know, it's just like a claim. I swear to God, the same three ingredients. Got to have a doctor's nexus. Got to want that greenhouse. And you got to have your mental health specialist or whoever it happens to be, your licensed therapist, say, yeah, that greenhouse, he'd look good in that greenhouse. That'd look good, real good on him. He'd feel a whole lot better to be at a greenhouse.
Good therapy.
Third requirement is just you got to be severely disabled. And I mean severely. You need a little bit. I think 100% schedulers darn near the opening bid like a pair of jacks to get in this poker game.
you need a pretty good level of SMC or something like that, too. You need something. You need a severe disability. You need something.
Right. You know, the guy who's got
at least an ass.
60 or 70% TDIU permanent total is not going to get into that big ticket.
No, you're going to need an
ass. I have.
You at least need an ass.
A 60, a 40, and a 30, and I got it. And I suspect that if I hadn't have been that disabled and specifically had diseases that said stay in a warm place, I don't know that I would have under any other circumstances.
Right,
but
right.
Anybody else kind of stuff, you just gotta persevere. I remember the day that counselor looked at me in my house and looked out at my little greenhouse out there, the little one I have, the little 6x8 thing. And he looks at it, he says, you better get used to that, son, because that's your greenhouse. I want a VA to give me a big one. And he says, well, you're dreaming, son. That's just never going to, that's not in the cards. Let's get back to the computer.
It's not in the cards.
I should have held my water on that. I gave up the sewing machine, you know. I used that as my cave-in tool, as a bargaining chip. I gave in the sewing machine, but I wasn't going to give in on the greenhouse. 5 years later, there you go.
I wouldn't mind having me a little fishing, like a little shop to make fishing lure stuff in.
Well, what's
That's
your rating?
Decent.
Are you at 100%?
Huh?
Are you at 100%?
Me? Yeah, I'm missing something. I've got a. Yeah, I'm way over 100.
Oh, cool! I'd apply for it tomorrow morning. Form 1900. Download it right off the internet. Man, they got $185,000 just sitting there with your name on it. If you don't ask for it, it just goes into somebody's bonus check envelope.
$185,000.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just like a claim. If you file for it and you know it's 85% chance of denial, with VR&E, it's pretty much the same exact statistics.
They take it to BVA.
Well, you can do that, but you know what? John, there's a whole other venue there. They have something called an administrative appeal. If you get denied by your local Sioux City or Portland VA regional office, if that local yokel denies you, you don't file a nod. You don't file a notice of disagreement right out of the box. You say, I want an administrative review. I want you to send us some gun down to Washington, D.C. I want you to let the big boys down there with the fancy hats take a gander at it and give me a reading on it, and let's see what they say about it. And that's an administrative review, and that's where I won my computer, because they know the law. You've got to realize the guys here, all they're doing is handing out, you know, hammers and tool pouches and a little bit of technical college to some guys on VR&E that are learning a new trade that are 20-30% disabled. That independent living program, to them, that doesn't exist. That's just something that, yeah, you get that, but you have to be disabled. And these guys, most part, you know, 40% retraining to become a carpenter or a draftsman or something like that, they understand that. And $5,000 worth of technical college over a 6-8 month period, but that's where their mental acuity stops. When you have an ILP program and you got all this money available, $25,000 right there at your fingertips at the regional office that you can approve with one signature as the VR&E officer. You can sign off on that and give that old boy a 20 by 20 greenhouse with no heat in it, just pure glass or pure whatever. Non-dirt with no concrete floor, he's not going to do it. It's just he can't write a check for $25,000, and it's frivolous, and it doesn't. The guy ain't learning how to build greenhouses. He's getting a greenhouse, and that's no fair. So he just you lose. That's 85% chance. Just like any claim you file for hammer toe, you're going to get denied, regardless of whether you might be entitled. Who cares? VA doesn't care about whether it's right or wrong. It's just that they have a way of doing things. And administrative review gives you one more step. It's like a reconsideration request. It's one of the rare places in the world you'll find that intermediate step. Now, if you get denied on the administrative review, pow, that's where you file your notice of disagreement. And just like the VA, you get in line, because you're going to have to wait for one of those real DROs down there in the regular part of the office that are doing the decisions. The moment you file the nod, it leaves VR&E and it goes into the judicial system physically. And they have to learn how to read the M28 manual instead of the M21. And they know nothing, so they just deny it, move it to the next stage. So that's why they've never, ever had anybody fight them like this up to the court of the BVA. When I walked in there for that sit-down with the board hearing with Judge Vito Clemente, I looked him in the eye and I says, you know, I don't care if you approve or deny the greenhouse, Vito. This is before the mic got turned on, and he told me, call me Vito. I said, okay. I don't care whether you do it or not. If you deny me, that's okay. We'll just take it on up to the CAVC. We'll see what they have to say about it. And he couldn't even believe that he had the authority to grant me a greenhouse when we first presented it to him. Greenhouse? What's the VA doing handing out greenhouses? What's that all about? Like, I kind of got him familiar with the concept of ILP, but then I handed it to him, and he says, you mean I could give you a greenhouse? I says, oh, yeah, you can. He says, huh, that's too cool for school.
How's Law Bob on this? Did he help you out any?
Oh, yeah, well, I wrote the whole thing up for the last 5 years, but it's nice having Bob there because he looks ill, you know, Vito, and they look at each other, and they did the famous handshake and the fist bump and all that. They know each other real well. And they're good friends because they're both veterans. And so, yeah, it was kind of it was encouraging. Bob earned his money just being there.
Mm-hmm.
My book. I mean, just because.
You heard that, Bob, if you listen.
I told him I was on the radio. He might be listening. But anyway,
yeah.
It was funny. When we walked into the room, old Vito goes, Bob, you slippery dog, you. What are you doing out of Detroit? Bob looked at him and said, Jesus, they let you out of D.C. without a leash? So, yeah, it's important that you have that camaraderie with the judge, sure. But I let him know in no uncertain terms before we even went on the record. I welcome your denial. I encourage the denial. I want this to go up to the Court of Veterans Appeals because I want to have a three-judge panel and have a ruling on ILP program once and for all. Get it out, get it there where everybody can see it, read it, and know all about it. And I think the jury was in immediately on that. Vito went back to D.C. He says, you guys realize this thing's headed to a panel at the CAVC. I'm sure they all looked at each other. He says, no, it's not. Give him the greenhouse, Vito.
Give him the greenhouse, Vito.
Got that, motherfucker.
Well, at least you got it. But, you know, you were talking to, you know, some of these guys, you know, we get our VA check and we get, you know, we get old, start getting, you know, our disability start getting worse and things like that. And, you know, later on in life, you know, we kind of forget, you know, that the VA kind of has got they've got a responsibility to take care of us to a major extent, you know. And some of our disabilities, you know, increase. And,
I'm sure that's what
it
says on the 10 Vermont Avenue Northwest of something about the for he who shall have borne the battle. But I don't think in practice, I don't think you believe that, do you, that they honestly think that they're performing something for us?
They want us to reach the ultimate goal, which is to utilize their last, which is the VA cemetery system. You know, that's their ultimate goal. But, you know, they need to be helped, you know. Veterans health, you know, we get sick, you know, and our service-tech disabilities get worse. They ought to be able to help us, you know, to improve our quality of life. Because that's what it's all about.
I think the only way that's ever going to happen is if we're given true VA choice to just go do what we want to do, whether it's local doctor that you've had forever, instead of having to travel 90 miles or 120 miles one way to get to a VAMC for centralized medical care of you know, intensive specialized medical care. I know you've got those little CO, what do they call it, community-based CBOA?
CBOC, yes. That's what the community-based outpatient care. Of course, now I've got another acronym for it, but I cannot say officially on the radio because it's got a couple of words that do not mix with being on the radio.
Well, think of those things as just a bunch of general practitioners with absolutely no specialty, just basically taking your temperature, your pulse, and giving you some aspirin. But the moment you come in with a ulcerated liver or a Crohn's disease outbreak, first thing they do is they have to take you down to the VAMC and work with you there because that's where all the specialists are. They don't go out to the field. They won't let you go to the private folks and do it that way because they insist on it being centralized. And I went through the system. From 2008 until I threw up my hands and escaped in 2011, and all I saw was mismanagement, wasted time. It looked like union, you know, where you have five guys standing there, one of them's doing all the shoveling, and the other three are smoking a cigarette, and then one guy's on the phone.
Yeah.
And that's what represents to me. If you take and privatize that, or just take all the money that you're squandering on that and put it out there in the private network for veterans, first of all, I bet you veterans wouldn't be dying. They wouldn't be falling like flies because they couldn't get in to see a doctor.
Well, that whole thing's got about a 20% chance of actually coming to fruition here in the next year.
Bob McDonald, Secretary McDonald, has a lot to offer veterans. I can see that if he could get control of the insane asylum. But it's the VA as a bureaucracy has been out of control since its inception in 1921.
Right.
Nobody has ever been able to corral it, lasso it, tie it down, and make it work efficiently. There's too many people get in there and go, man, my brother-in-law, Bill, well, he's a carpenter. I'll get him to build a new shop out back here at the VAMC, and he'll give me a $1,200 kickback, and so on. Then the lumber company everybody's got a little fork in this thing except for the veteran, and all of a sudden you've got a gold-plated shed that's like $4.5 million, and you and I could build it for $40,000. That's the level of waste I see. They got some places have beautiful gear and technicians that couldn't find their rear end with a methane detector trying to operate the stuff. Can't do it. You got other places where people have intelligent, caring, compassionate MC personnel, and they have no support structure from above that just cuts them like a knife bone.
They got such a tight network in a certain area. It's just dangerous because even the secretaries or political appointees, they're whitewashed. They're just completely blowed over. Poor Shinseki, he got dozered. Then he got run over by a steamroller. And then he got cushioned. And then he got discombobulated. And then he lost his job.
Well, I can see. VA secretary has probably gone in there. There's a few of them that I find that I get a little green around the gills thinking about them, but Principi and Peak, you know, the two guys that own QTC that does all the, I think everybody knows that by now, that QTC is a corporation that's owned by, well,
James Peak and Anthony Principi.
Two prior secretaries. It's kind of funny how they could get that contract. It was $8 million 1 year, and it's something like about $2.5 billion a year now that they're pulling in from it. So, you know that somebody's screwing the pooch on this thing. But they have been all the way back to 1921. Shinseki just sat there and listened to everybody tell him everything's okay. But Eric, Rick, you just shut up and get up there and do your PR speech and tell everybody it's fine. Meanwhile, you know, people are dying and veterans aren't getting their medical care. I get that. I understand that. And Bob McDonald is going to be, he's up against the same thing. And the two of them, between him and Gizmo, which is the other guy, his second in command there, Gilmore or whatever, they both mean well, but they can't accomplish anything because they have this juggernaut coming down on them. They mean well, and there's probably a bunch of people down in the lower echelons that trust them, love them, but the OIG is infected. It won't do anything. The SES group, they all support each other in a union, and they won't fire any one of them because
buddy
the rest
system.
Of them won't support it.
The buddy system, TBS.
Toiling on that thing. Other.
You remember QTC is that group that gave you your CMP exam when you had to go outside the VA to get it done. That's the contract the VA used. And then when you sent the VA asked for a copy of the evidence according to get that exam, they said, bite me, you're not going to get a copy of it. That's QTC. So and you had to call your congressman to get a copy of it. So just in case you didn't know, that's what QTC stands for.
The first time I saw mine was after I won, asked for my C file about 2009 when I was trying to figure out how I was going to go all the way back to 94. And I decided maybe I better find out. I needed some ammunition. And there, sure enough, right there is my QTC, two of them. They didn't trust the first one. They went out for a second QTC, IME, what they call independent medical opinion or examination. It was this guy who was sitting in Diamond Bar, California. I never heard of him, never seen him before in my life. Jamrish Tahriri or something. And he says, well, you know, it could have been, and it could not have been, and it might have been, and my Uncle Earl had that, and yeah, but, you know, it, you got to look at it like this, is he's stage four, and he's got that genotype that's the only place they got that kind of hepatitis C is over there in Vietnam. So hey, maybe he did get it there. And he's got that big old long gunshot gash wound on his leg, so maybe he didn't get a transfusion, even if we can't find the paperwork. Now, that's how you win things, but the QTC, that's the most blatant thing everyone can see just by looking at it. You can tell if two guys who are VA secretaries own big chunks of this company, and they're doing business with VA and have been since before they were secretaries. They were part of QTC before they became VA secretaries. That's what's just concerning about this. I mean, nobody even bats an eyelash.
There should be a conflict of interest.
Nobody even says, don't you think that's a little strange? You know, that's like collusion. That's like, you know, malfeasance and misfeasance. Nobody says that.
If I'm a contracting officer and I give a job to a family member, I'd probably get put in prison, don't you?
You and I'd go to jail under most circumstances,
right,
doing what guys are doing. I just don't believe it. You get caught only because you're not paying somebody enough.
You'd go to special jail for me.
To their political fund or something.
It's for me to get Mo. If you don't close it first.
Well, like I said about the show, had it, the website, my website too, I'm seeing a tremendous, huge uptick of Vietnam vets that are going to almost be equal to or higher probably than even Afghanistan era vets that are going to start filing claims, and VA's priding themselves on the fact that the bow wave, remember they instituted all these new ways to get rid of claims. They got the backlog down to about 80,000, I think it was, on December 31st. I don't know how much higher it's gotten than that. Keeping track of it.
Is that before they found them 40,000 claims floating in Tampa?
Well, all I know is that VA released something that says we almost made it in 2015. We said that we'd have the backlog gone by December 31st, 2015. We came up 80,000 claims short, but we were down in the hole with about 1,250,000 when we said that. So they felt like they'd done a job. So I don't know. I mean, if there's 40,000 all by themselves in St. Pete's, we're in a world of poo-poo.
And that's what they said, and the others said, but then also you have to look at, even though they said the claims backlog has been reduced, being the quite anti-optimist that I am, when items regarding the VA are brought to light, I would love to be able to see the actual results and the actual levels that the BVA and the appeal section have acquired since the VA has reduced the claims backlog so well.
Interesting, but they got too many different piles. There are too many in-baskets. There's the in-basket for the NODs, the in-basket for new claims, the in-basket for the fully developed claims.
So if the VA has reduced their claims backlog by 500,000, if they reduced the 500,000...
Those are still claims, aren't they?
It don't matter, yeah. Well, they don't count them because they count these ones different. So you got your VA claims, you got your appeals. So I'm sure the appeals went up just the exact number that the claims went down.
Well, of course
that tells me.
I don't think anybody's convinced that they waved their magic wand and the pumpkin turned into a
you've heard chariot
with mice that turned into horses or something.
You ever heard of the Nalabet? It's called like the alphabet, but called the Nalabet.
No.
A now, B now, C now, D now.
I probably have.
That's the Nalabet.
It's unique to VA, but one thing that with all these Vietnam vets, as I was talking about coming into the system with all their handwritten records, here we are in our new digital world that we're living in, and all of us have, all the newer guys all have the typewritten stuff. It's all nice and clean, and the paper is all white, always white. It's not yellow or blue or green or some other weird color that he was using back then. But it's all handwritten, and none of that stuff, unless it gets transcribed, none of it's going to make it into the new files with the VBMS, the Veterans Benefits Management System. It hinges entirely on electronics. There's no fashion guy sitting there at a desk smoking a cigarette, flipping pages in your C file and reading your evidence, and who knows the law in his head. You got some pimple-nosed kid in there now that's about 23 years old. He used to be a claim adjuster for Allstate, and he couldn't pass the drug, so he came to work at the VA.
Already knows how to say no. They traded him Allstate.
So the M21, one manual reboot, and if you have any questions, you just put it in there, and the computer gives you the answer. So it's a lot simpler than having to memorize regulations and know the law. You don't need to know the law. All you need to know is a keyboard and how to type it in the right block, and then you get your answer. And you don't care what the answer is. There's no compassion. Something types it up someplace else. You don't see the full product from start to finish. All you see is the front end. It's like an assembly line. You see the engine being dropped in, and you tighten the bolts and the motor mounts, and it keeps on going down the line. You don't see the chairs go in. You don't see the tires get put on. You don't see the paint job and all the rest of the things that go to it. All you see is what comes by in front of you. So there isn't any feeling in the VA that they're screwing you, because there's very few even know they're screwing you. Most of those are GS-13s, and they're called decision review officers. And they're the hierarchy. They're about 10 minutes away from joining the senior executive service and getting $157,000 a year instead of $112,000. So, of course, they're going to be part of the program, son.
They're probably 14s.
Those guys have a little rule hanging on the wall in their offices that you don't get to see. It says, rule number one, deny the vet. Rule number two, if you can't get it right or if you have to grant, go back to rule number one.
Refer to rule number one.
Yes, that's a refer to rule number one. Rule
in doubt, refer, yeah. They used
go
to hire
back to one.
Back in the 90s and 2000s. Yeah, they used to hire their raiders and things like that. They would have the KSAs, knowledge, skills, and abilities. They would hire the guys, and they would ask for creative writers, people that had the ability to think and creatively write. They would give that a lot of thought when they hired people, you know, as far as the structural writing to write these claims stuff out. I think it changed away from that now because of the computer system. So it's just,
computer system like this, it just distances the raider from the individual, and there's no rapport, there's no camaraderie. If the raider is a veteran, that he might be able to have some insight by talking to the claimant on a one-on-one basis. Let me give you an idea how the VA worked back in 1974. Moved up here to Seattle, and I wanted to buy a house, and I was single, but I had my future wife, girlfriend, whatever. And I put in a bid on a house, made an offer on it, and told the guy I wanted to write it up as a Veterans Administration loan, VA loan. And he says, sure. And then all of a sudden he comes back denied and says, you're not married. You're not going to sell a house to an unmarried veteran. You got to be married, have kids, married with children. And then you get a VA loan because that anchor you down and you have to work to pay for it. So I went and called up the number on the denial slip, and I talked to some guy named Sheffield or something, and I said, can I come down and talk to you? He said, sure, I'm on the 11th floor of the Albert Building or something like that. Well, I sashayed on down there, parked the car, and ran up there, came to the front office. I said, where's Mr. Sheffield's office? He said, go down the hallway there. It's on the left. So you walk right in an office, knock on a little piece of glass divider. Come on in, Mr. Graham, have a set. And no metal check. They didn't make sure I didn't have a tactical nuclear device or a hand grenade in my pocket. We sat down. We talked about my need for being married if he was going to give me a VA loan, and that's the only way he was going to do it. So I got married about a month later, and sure enough, my loan got approved. I mean, that's how we did. It was almost like on a handshake. I can't see myself going up to the 11th floor and getting off the elevator and walking into the VA unannounced and just sashaying down some hallway somewhere.
You won't do that, no. You've got police officers. You won't make it.
Well, they're going to know me soon enough on there because I'm going to be in there on a pretty regular basis. And I got my little Board of Veterans Appeals hearing, but I imagine I'm getting me a real badge from them eventually with my picture. It says, Alex Graham, VA asshole.
You're going to have that representation picture and badge and the courage badge.
Today, you know what my good deed was, sir? My good deed today was I took that buddy of mine, Butch Long, that just lives right down the road from me here, him and his wife and another gal that, I gave her all the instructions on what she needed to get her PTSD claim through. She's a Vietnam-era vet nurse. And she had won about a month and a half ago, and I didn't even know about it. Nobody even told me. So she and her husband and my friend Butch and his wife Barb didn't know where to go to get their new commissary card. So I loaded them all up, and we drove down the expedition and drove to McCord Air Force Base, and there's four brand new commissary cards in existence now.
Oh, Lord, they happy as they can be now. They've got their shop to exchange, all that tax-free stuff.
Yeah, well, they earned it. That's one of the prizes of being 100% service connected, is you get that benefit. And,
let me ask you,
valuable
tell you something.
It's valuable.
Do you use the exchange online program?
I have, but I generally like to see what I like. I'm one of them guys who likes to look at the TV and feel it and see what the stand looks like. I don't like to just buy from the picture.
No. Here's the deal now. You go in there, and they've got specialty stores now that you order from.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of their electronics or office stuff, they're now using Office Depot.
You
can buy stuff from Office Depot. And you can buy it through the exchange store tax-free. Anything Office Depot has.
Office Depot just basically supplies the product, so to speak.
Yeah. When you get the exchange price.
I can remember the good old days with the USAA insurance. You go into the dealership and you look at the Dodge work van over there in the commercial section.
Mm-hmm.
Kick the tires on the extended one, and the guy comes over and he says, we're selling that one for $21,600, sir. And I says, well, write her up. And you go inside, and he's like, hold on a second. Can I borrow your phone? And you call up USAA, and he says, buyer service? Yeah, okay, I'm at Tom Doofus Dodge Chrysler. Here's the salesman. So you hand the phone to the salesman, and the guy from USAA says, this is how much we're going to give you for that Dodge van out there that Mr. Graham's getting ready to buy. You got a pencil? Write this down. And they dictate the because they have that buyer's, they got a huge buying force. They used to do that. I don't know if they still do, but they used to do that.
They give you so much off. Like, I bought this Chevrolet here by last April, and I got like almost $800 off on it.
Well, I can remember back in the 60s, my dad would buy one when we were in Washington, D.C. He bought my daughter or my sister a station wagon for her to drive up to college in Vermont. And some dealership in West Virginia bid on it and won it. And somebody had to go over to West Virginia to get the car. I think my dad drove over there with a friend and picked the car up and brought it back to D.C. from Huntington. But, I mean, he won the bid, and it was ridiculously lower. That's why USAA made him go to Huntington to go get the car.
That wasn't no fun. I've been through there.
I've never
drive from Huntington to D.C.
It's up and down, if I remember correctly.
Straight up. I pulled an RV there one year. Oh, my God. 6 miles a gallon. Beautiful country.
I'm gonna laugh when you say that. You come out west and drive over to Rocky Mountains, and you get over here and drive over to Cascades, and you tell me those little pimple bump Appalachian mountains of yours are up and down. You haven't gotten to the point where you're freezing in the middle of summer, and you haven't even reached the summit yet.
I've been there. I've been to the West Coast too, Alex. I've drove across all of them. I've never pulled an RV across the West Coast Mountains.
Tell you what.
Big difference.
It's not as cold up here now anymore. You might want to come visit again and check it out. I'm looking out the window right now, and I'm looking at my dandelions, or not dandelions, what are them yellow things? Daffodils are already up, and it's not even March yet.
Yeah, that's good.
That's warming. I like it.
It's good. Of course, you guys are Mediterranean-type climate, too. You're still pretty warm.
How did
Gerald
find any ice to slip on?
He didn't. He's in his living room. He's just hardwood laying around his hip. He got up to transfer him from going from his chair to the couch, and he just got up and got dizzy. Service-connected disability, and his COPD is bad stuff. I mean, he just got dizzy and went down. The lights went out. Laid there, and they come and got him. They called the ambulance, took him in, and O2 sats were really low, and they couldn't work on him they couldn't do anything with him for several hours, and then they finally got him stabilized, and this is Sunday night, and they couldn't do surgery till Wednesday up in the day, and they got the surgery done, so he got out, and he's been up and everything now. I talked to him this morning. He's doing a lot better, and she finally got home and got some rest and stuff. He's been He's so far so good. He's doing some rehab and stuff. He's going to be, he said he stood up. It's painful, he said, but they said that he was doing better than a lot of people that was a lot better shape than he was, moving around stuff with it, and he seems to be satisfied.
Yeah, ice, and I was thinking to myself, what the weather's exactly ass backwards. If you guys have got ice and I got daffodils poking up, and that's about 55 degrees.
Hey,
It's about 70 here today.
10th. We're popping in the 60s and 70s now. It's up and down, though, this type of weather here. So it's, it's going to break free any time, but, it's still pretty cold some places.
And I'm sorry. I love that area. I know exactly what you're talking about, but, the only thing that queers the deal is all them hurricanes and tornadoes that come through there. I lived on the East Coast for the longest time, and I'll tell you, if it wasn't for that crazy weather back there, I think I probably could live there year-round. I could deal with the humidity and things like that like I did when I was a kid. But I'm sorry, that's a tornado's a deal-breaker.
Well, they don't have it many tornadoes, east of Mississippi. You have some. You have some down south a little bit. But, that's all my goal is to get down south. I mean, right here in this area, it's okay, but taxes and it's pretty bad. It's a pretty bad state to live in tax wise and things like that. The veteran benefits are decent. They're not the greatest. I mean, a lot of these states offer good veteran benefits, and if you're a disabled veteran, you don't live in Oklahoma, there's something wrong with you. They have a lot of tornadoes. We got the best veteran benefits going. If you live in Oklahoma, they give you 100% veteran. You don't even pay sales tax. You know that, Alex?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, best veteran benefit state going.
Has a batch of better, if all of them were uniform and all of them incorporated everything that each of the best did, we'd have the best of all worlds as veterans. And
yeah.
I think that's, but in the real world,
mm-hmm.
in the real world, I get 30% off of my tax bill if I'm a veteran, 100% SC veteran, 33% off of my bill in Washington State. Some guy just wrote 30. Me and says, man, I get all of mine off. So,
yep.
I mean, that kind of sticks in my craw.
Florida and other places you get all off, but
we don't have an income tax though.
You're right to work state.
We have it's a right to work state. There's a lot of things here that are pretty interesting about Washington State. You can carry a gun openly on your hip, loaded.
Yeah, can you carry
concealed? And nobody
can you carry permit too?
Crap about it unless you go into a post office or something. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
it's like that in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Alaska.
Washington, like Colorado, is it? Can you cultivate and actually grow some mambas of cannabis or whatever it is? Can you actually grow marijuana in Washington State now?
I don't know that you can grow it, but there's a store right down the street. About 2 miles from my house, there's a store. You can just walk right in there and buy all you want. Why grow it?
So,
legal.
They say that marijuana has given Denver the new meaning to the Mile High City, and I agree with that. So,
Colorado and Washington are the first two, but you know as well as I do how Democrats work. You know,
yep.
sure is that somebody's looking over there at Washington and Colorado and looking at all of $135 million more per year in their pot that they can go out and they can give to poor people and more programs, and they can hire their best friends to administrate the new programs, and they
yep.
can make a bigger elephant out of a big one they already have that doesn't
oh,
do
yeah.
anymore. And that's what's going to happen with all that marijuana money. It's not, you know, it's just like tobacco money. All them tobacco taxes, not a dime of that goes back to some poor guy with emphysema that's got an oxygen tank. I'm sorry.
No, it doesn't
work.
It doesn't work that way. Of course, the government didn't put a support price either on marijuana.
They just collect the taxes and say what
yep.
they're going to do. The taxes all just go into this big 55-gallon drum, and somebody says, well, how are you ever going to separate them now? Well, we don't need to. Don't worry about it. You don't need to worry about that for you. That's what we do. We're government.
We use them back east. Did you ever work in tobacco fields, Alex, growing up?
I never. When I was back east, all I did was go to school or hunt and fish, in that order.
Hunt and fish. You still get a chance to fish in Oregon? I mean, Washington?
Oh, yeah. God, this is the most neatest thing in the world here. Imagine throwing in there and getting your saltwater rod and reel wet in the morning, and then just turn sideways, drive 2.5 miles to a pond and start trying to fish for a pond trout in the afternoon, evening, before dark. I mean, that's what we're blessed with here is fish of any flavor, size, or anything. The only thing we don't have is smallmouth bass here.
You can go out towards Spokane, get them.
Yeah, go all the way down to Oregon before you start seeing bass. For some reason, the people around here don't like it or don't tolerate it or dynamite the ponds to get rid of them. That's the best of all of them.
Spokane, Washington, the best place. They got a small map up in Spokane, big ones. But small map's good bass.
River, that thing's horribly polluted.
No, they got some lakes out there. It's got them in there. But now, where I'm from, we got the world record smallmouth, Del Hollow. Big fish. Mm-hmm. Smallmouth, like, people ask me what it's like catching a big smallmouth. I used to catch a lot of them in my younger days. It's like, it's a brown fish. So what you do is you get your rod and reel and put some Kevlar line on it. You see the UPS man driving down the road, you take your crankbait with hooks, treble hooks, you hook on the back of the UPS truck and try to stop it. That's what you do to catch a smallmouth.
Fishing in a long time. Trout doesn't interest me. It's like just catching a snag. You don't really feel like a fish. It's you catch
good eating
it, really fight. It doesn't spit the lure
salmon,
back
right?
at you. 50 miles an hour.
You got salmon,
when
right?
jump.
Don't you have salmon?
Yeah, well, that's a game fish there. That's a lot of fun. But that's saltwater. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about freshwater.
You should have largemouth bass too, right?
No. You can't find bass up here. I had this pond I used to live in a what they call a kind of a lake community up here. All the houses were built around a lake and a few of them back from the lake. In 1989, when I moved up here to this place here, I sent back somewhere online. I bought a whole bunch of bass fry, and they arrived about 5 days later, and I turned them all loose in there in that pond. I call it a pond. It was not very big. It's about a half a mile across, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I call a real pond, a real lake, something that, you know, take you 45 minutes to paddle across in a canoe with no wind. That'd be a lake.
Right.
This thing you paddle across in 5 minutes, with the wind in your face, you could still do it in 5 minutes, but I turned all them bass loose in there, and they started eating up all the trout fry. And then they complained, and the people that owned ran the board of trustees or whatever, they complained. They wanted to know who turned the bass loose, so I shut up and didn't say nothing. I worked real hard trying to catch them all and get them out of there, but they ended up killing everything, cleaning up, you know, sterilizing the lake, starting all over with trout. Yeah, what makes people do stupid things like that? Stream trout, some trout that works for a living in a stream is fighting the current all the time. It has some texture to it, like bass does.
Trout better be a stream, because you get trout balled up in a reservoir, and it's not you're liable to have an effect on the food quality.
Yeah, it doesn't have that muscle texture.
No,
whatever
it is.
Yeah, associate
like farm raised fish, yeah.
More like on the farm raised salmon you buy at the store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we got that far away from veterans, but I'll tell you what. In summary, they'll say this: all you Vietnam vets out there that are listening to me, if you're filing, getting ready to file, haven't finished filing, or you planning on filing, you better be thinking about the records you're going to be submitting to them, or if they are handwritten and already in your C file, you better be having them redone by a transcription service and turned into a typewritten product so that it'll work when it goes into the VBMS system. Or all that evidence is just going to end up on the cutting room floor, and you're not going to get a raider to pick it up and read it, try to decipher the scrawl of some doctor that was writing at 2 o'clock in the morning after you've been awake for about 24 hours writing up your post-op report after they finished gluing you back together at Da Nang or Chu Lai Evac Center. Those records aren't going to make it into your decision, so they might be cited as evidence, but the guys aren't going to be able to read it. They're not going to waste their time on it. The computer can't read it, and if the computer can't read it, it can't tell the raider to look at it. And that, my friends, it's going to be the end of your claims unless you've got somebody who knows what they're doing driving the claim boat for you. And I'm not talking about VSOs from DAV and VFW, because those guys don't even understand a VBMS concept. They haven't even been taught it yet. There's guys out there still handwriting 4138s out for their veterans and submitting it as evidence on claims for tinnitus or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
Be it Vietnam vets or from Afghanistan. They haven't learned that they're going to have to start using the new format. And until that happens, until that training gets out there to the VSOs and the rest of them, there's going to be a whole lot less claims that go anywhere. They're not going to require a lot of work to deny them, really.
Well, that's true, Alex. That's the main truth. You know, you got to find good representation, whatever you do. And if you know you need that, your quality of representation is your actual, that's your entire claim.
I went to see how many, I was trying to discern how many VA agents they actually have as opposed to VA attorneys, but they don't break down separately that way with the VA. But this will really shock you. Think how many veterans out there always saying, well, who would you use for an attorney? There's 800 VA representatives that are either attorneys or VA agents out there. 800 across the plain of America. 800 Ken Carpenters, 800
Bob,
800 Eagles. I mean, there's how many? You know, I'm going to make it 801, but I've been at this now for 9 months, and they still haven't called me up to take the test yet. So you can see how they keep that number artificially low. They just don't approve anybody. So it should be interesting. Should be an interesting new year. 2016, to see which way the VA goes. We already know where they're going with their senior executives. They're just rehiring them or preventing Secretary Bob from firing them is what they're doing. Still there, John? Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Alex, buddy, we're just about completely out of time anyways.
Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking. Getting close to it.
Yes, thank you. But I wanted to thank you, buddy, for coming on. We'll have to do this again. Hopefully, we'll get back on schedule and try to get it back on during the middle of next week. That way, we can get Gerald. Then maybe Gerald can be back on his feet. I mean, he'd probably be home any day now. The way he's doing good. And he actually called in while I was doing the show a while ago. And I guess he thought we was doing a little bit different or something. So maybe he's. Maybe he's getting with it quicker than we thought. Good information, Alex. We appreciate you coming on.
It scares the bejesus out of me to see that I'm going to be losing a lot of my brothers that are filing claims from my war. It just disturbs me no end that they're not going to get their justice just because their records are handwritten, and more appropriately, a lot of them don't have computers. Don't have any computer training, can't even get on there. I had guys mailing me stuff still because they don't have any access to a scanner or fax machine or anything. Still using snail mail to send me something and say, would you please take a look at this? I can't figure it out. Thank you for the appreciate the ability to talk and help people out here.
Come on, buddy. Anytime if we'll get together next week, we'll find some other subject to get on to. You've got a lot of information to go with and stuff. And, you know, maybe they'll call you and tell you to get that test took pretty soon because, you know, we need to get that talent out there active and get it going. Get some of these people paid so you can start getting paid for what you do.
Well,
you got a new lease on life now, and that's what you need to do. Turn that lease into lettuce.
I know what I'm going to do with it, though. I just know I'm just going to be pretty generous with people. I'm not going to take them to the cleaners like attorneys normally do. I know that would be their dependent. But if I charge people like that, I know where the money's going to go. It's just going to get tilled right back into helping more veterans because I run across them every day. Some of the saddest stories that, you know, I just wish you had enough money to throw it at them.
I wish I did, too. All right, buddy, I appreciate it, man. Folks, thanks for listening to the show. We'll catch you next week on the Had It Blog Talk Radio show. And for now, this is B.J. Basser. We'll be signing off for now. You've been listening to the Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Hadit.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show and are not the opinions of Hadit.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Had It.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basher Show.